They draw around each of those sensitive instruments an ethereal garment woven from the elements of their, the spirit's, own lives, which, like a mantle of light, protects the mediums from the poisonous arrows of persecution, scorn, and envy hurled against them by malicious or distrustful minds, and guards them in their labor of love for the angels. Spirits are well aware that thoughts are tangible things that can be both seen and felt, and can wound or heal the sensitive souls to whom they are directed, according to their blighting or beneficent character. Thus, when one is envious or in any manner hostile in feeling to another, the thoughts which he directs toward that person, charged as they are with the virile magnetism the exercise of hatred or any other passion engenders, strike upon the spirit of him to whom they are directed with stinging effect. If the individual of whom this person happens to think unkindly or severely is one susceptible to spiritual and other influences, a kept in a negative condition because of the frequent control of his organism by spirits, a he will keenly sense the silent shafts of thought hurled against him, and suffer in consequence. Many mediums experience mental and physical pain, as well as debility of power, frequently when they are unaware of the cause, while at the very time some person, who is antagonistic to them and their work, is thinking unkindly of them, thus producing a disastrous effect upon the life of the sensitive subject of their thoughts. Therefore, the work of the band of spirits here alluded to is a highly important one, for the magnetic sympathy and love of these pure-minded, earnest, and tender young beings produce a tranquilizing, soothing effect upon the lives of the mediums whom they approach, which is very beneficial to them. And though each medium has a band of attending spirits, composed of males and females, many of whom are powerful to guard and care for the susceptible instrument under their charge, yet they are ever glad to be assisted in the performance of their arduous duties of demonstrating immortal truth to mortals, and at the same time warding off unpleasant and dangerous conditions from their mediums, by the spirits of whom I write. Just here allow me to remark that as unkind and malicious thoughts of another will wound and annoy that person, so gentle, loving, and kindly thoughts concerning a friend will reach the individual to whom they are directed with an influence refreshing and sweet, and carry blessing upon their way. How important, then, that we should all endeavor to cultivate kindly feelings in our hearts for our fellows, that our influence may result in good for humanity. Development of new mediums. While the Society of Spirits here mentioned have much to do in exerting a cheerful influence over mediums in order to keep them in condition for their work, this does not comprise the extent of their labors. To spread the truth, and to be able to enlighten humanity at large upon the great question of immortal life, new mediums must be developed and brought into the field of spiritual labor. The spirit world has need of more instruments, and the members of our society find a work in visiting Earth's people, and seeking mediumistic persons whose powers can be unfolded for the use of spirit helpers and the service of humanity. This task is pursued with zeal and earnestness, and many mortals are thus discovered and magnetically operated upon whose powers are developing for the work of the future. While certain individuals in middle and advanced life are becoming mediums, many young people are developing, in the privacy of home life, medial powers that are to be utilized by the spirits for the furtherance of their grand work. And the bands of young spirits from our cooperative society are determined that they will do all in their power to make this labor a mighty success. Our cooperative society. Some 3 summers ago, a small company of spiritualists visiting from the West, while assembled in an upper room of one of the largest hotels in Boston, was addressed by Betsy, the spirit messenger of Mrs. J. C. Jackson, one of Cincinnati's most popular and active mediums, upon the subject of cooperation. At that time, the sprightly and entertaining control of Mrs. Jackson proposed that those present should form themselves into a society for the purpose of uniting their efforts in seeking to benefit and bless humanity. It was suggested that this organization be called our Cooperative Society, and known as an offshoot from, or a branch of, the Cooperative Societies of the Spirit World. Its members were not to be pledged to secrecy as to its forms and conditions, for their doings were to be such as would bear the inspection of the world, Their labors might be extended in any direction, provided they pointed to the one result, a that of blessing some human being, mortal or spirit, and could be performed together or separately, as circumstances at the time demanded. It was further urged that no initiation fee, quarterly or other payment be collected from its members, for its doors were to be open free to everyone who had a desire at heart to be of use in the world. The regulations of this society were to be such that all could conform to them in spirit as well as to the letter, for they only required earnest hearts and willing hands to do the work. The duties of the members who should join this band would be such as all could perform. The brother who possessed material wealth would be expected to use a portion of his means in assisting the needy, or in other beneficent ways, as an opportunity for doing so arose before him. Those who could give but a mite for the furtherance of some good work, and who gave it with a cheerful spirit, would perform their share of the society's labor just as truly as the man or woman of ample means who contributed largely. Those who had no money to bestow in charity, but who could speak a comforting word to the distressed, would be welcomed to the band, while those who, when the occasion arose, could perform some helpful hand service in aid of others would be called associates and helpers. In short, the duty of members would be to become useful to others, and to exert their energies to benefit their fellow beings. No matter in what direction or under what circumstances they found a human creature in need of any service they could render, a whether of a material or spiritual nature, a they must exercise their power, and perform that work. The life that now is may be beautified and made to extend its influence into the higher existence, and in blessing mortals by our helpful assistance, we also benefit and uplift the weary spirits who return to earthly conditions seeking release from their sufferings, while a benison of light and peace reflects from our good works upon the lovely evangels who are returning to mortal life to associate and cooperate with those who choose to join such a society as the one under consideration. A.O. Betsy further stated to her group of interested listeners that no special place or regular time of meeting would be chosen for our cooperative society, but that its members could perform their work wherever they might be, and that all the world had the privilege of considering themselves associative workers of the union if they chose to do so, while if true charity, kindly feeling and helpful service were cultivated and conscientiously exercised by each one, no report of their doings or progress would be needed. The angels would know, understand, and approve. What constitutes membership? We are all brothers and sisters, children of one father and mother, members of one great family, and it is time we endeavored to strengthen the bonds of fraternity between each other. Let us do this to make our fellows happier or their lot easier to bear. To call up a smile to a weary face, to make a heart sing with joy, to cause others to grow thankful for the amenities and blessings of life, is a noble work, and mortals who strive to do these things, wherever they are, or under whatsoever conditions they may labor, are members of our cooperative society, originated and established in the spirit world and revealed to mortals for their approval. Thus was the question of the formation of a cooperative society on earth, similar in its principles, objects and purposes, and to be as far-reaching in its results as the same organizations in the spiritual world, first mooted and approved by Betsy, the control of Mrs. Jackson, to a few friends in the city of Boston, but at the time nothing was accomplished in the way of forming a union, or of adopting the practical suggestions of that worthy and clear-sighted spirit. After the return of the party to their homes in Cincinnati, a spiritual séance was formed, which now convenes at the residence of Mrs. Dr. Jackson on the Saturday evenings of each week. Upon these occasions it is the privilege of my father's sister, a beautiful spirit who is truly a minister of peace, hope, and love to many weary souls, to regularly control Mrs. J., through whose organism she is enabled to give many instructive and important lessons that result in great good to her hearers. In frequenting the circles of her loved and ever faithful medium, my Aunt Sarah has become familiar with its regular attendants, and so understands in a measure their spiritual capacities, powers, and aspirations, and at one time, taking up the idea of our cooperative society, as outlined by Betsy upon an earlier occasion, she so clearly elaborated it to the understanding of the mortal friends that they expressed themselves in utter harmony with its design, and intimated they were ready to unite with the spiritual world in its labors of love for humanity. See also article of today. A.O. In the late 1840s, Americans began to flock to the spiritualist movement. ITS plans, purposes, and influence. Thus our cooperative society has been inaugurated, and its members are in earnest. They desire and intend to do good whenever and wherever they can, and to try and make the world better for having lived. Not only the Cincinnati Friends belong to this union, but individuals in Boston and elsewhere are aware of its existence, and join in its labors, declaring themselves members, and signifying their intention to perform their share of its good works, while hundreds of spirits are in sympathy with the movement, and are the unseen associates who are guiding it on to a glorious result. Already has the power and influence of our cooperative society spread in many directions, and the magnitude of its future usefulness and prosperity no man can predict. The grand, moral, spiritual teachings enunciated by celestial visitants through the instrumentality of Mrs. Jackson at her Saturday seances are productive of the best results, and are an important element in the work and growth of the society. All such meetings, where the truths taught are wisely and lovingly given, and are thankfully received by earnest minds who endeavor to incorporate them into their daily lives, are places where the true principles of union are to be found, and where harmony of action reveal the existence of AOR Cooperative Society. Allow me here to invite all my readers to join our association, and to become helpers in the work of blessing mankind. They have no need to send in their names. All they have to do is to resolve to do good wherever they can, and to set about it at once, and they will be recognized by the angels as co-workers and friends. Part 2nd. Chapter 15. Introductory. A Spirit May. This, the second part of our volume, will contain the writings of a beautiful young spirit whose literary labors, through her medium, Miss M. Tish Elmer, have been adapted to the taste of children and young people, though ample testimony has been received from a number of persons of mature age that these simply worded and easily understood poems and narratives of spirit children, and of child life in the spheres, are replete with interest, instruction, and enjoyment for AOR children of a larger growth than those for whom they were originally designed. Mary G. Kinsey is a younger sister of Kate A. Kinsey, a spirit violator whose descriptions of life and labor in the spirit world have been given on the preceding pages. She passed to spirit life June 27, 1862, at the tender age of 4 months and 1 day, and consequently has gained her knowledge and experience of life in the spirit world. In the early summer of 1879, Spirit Violet informed her medium that her sister Mary was a teacher of little children in the Summerland, that she dearly loved the young and lovely buds of humanity, and found her chief enjoyment in ministering to their needs, and in catering to their pleasure, and announced her, Mary's, intention of opening a children's department in the columns of the Voice of Angels, through which she would talk to the children of Earth, by singing them simple rhymes, or relating incidents and anecdotes of the children of the spirit world. Shortly after this, Mary appeared to the medium for the purpose of putting this plan into execution, inditing through the organism of Miss Shellamer her first contribution to a children's department for the Voice under the signature of Spirit May, which nom de plume she has ever since employed, and from that time to the present, this sweet young spirit has assiduously labored to present to mortal children something fresh and bright from the tablets of her mind, either in poetry or prose that would be at once interesting and instructive. At first, Spirit May's productions were given in the form of verse for the ready comprehension of her young readers, but later, she successfully attempted the description of how children live in the Summerland, with accounts of their labors, studies, and recreations. As this work is published for the purpose of informing mortals concerning real life in the spirit world, that portion of it which Spirit May has contributed will consist principally of her recitals of the work, doings, and surroundings of spirit children. The succeeding 4 chapters of this work treat upon these themes exclusively. Below we give a little brochure written by Spirit May, entitled, The Council of the Flowers, followed by a few selections from her poetic contributions to The Voice of Angels, with which it is thought best to finish this chapter. The Council of the Flowers. The soft, glistening raindrops of April fell over the tired earth, that had been held by wintry cold and storm for many long months. The bright golden sunbeams and the sweet, fragrant breezes of May swept over the fields and woods and lanes, calling their flowers forth to enjoy the beautiful springtime of gladness and mirth. Myriads of blossoms, white and yellow, red and purple and blue, sprang up from their nests of dainty green grasses and leaves, to swing in the passing breeze and shake the perfume from their petals with which to scent the balmy air. Roses and lilies, violets and daisies, pinks and cowslips, and a thousand other flowers made the hedges and gardens and meadows and forests appear gay and beautiful and very sweet. June came and went, followed by July and August, with their burning splendor of sunlight and heat. Many of the flowers bloomed in sweetness for a little while, and then dropped their leaves and died to earthly things, and passed away to the heaven where flowers bloom forever. Others, fragrant and fresh and fair, came to take their places, and so the whole world was sweet until the autumn came. Down, down, dropped the leaves from the trees, whirling along through the air, no longer wearing their summer hue of green, but bearing the marks of age in the dull, brown appearance which had come to them. The autumn time had come, and the oldest flowers began to shake their heads and whisper to each other that it was time for them to be gone, and that the winter must not find them here below. A great wind from the east, that had been listening to these remarks, caught up the words, and rushing over hill and dale, and wood and field, shrieked them into the ears of all the flowers that lingered there, causing them to draw their petals together and shiver in alarm. Then the wise old flowers said, "Let us call a council, and discuss the propriety of leaving earth before the Snow King comes." And so they gathered together all who could come, and concluded that they had lived quite long enough in this world, and it was time for them to take their flight to the great paradise of flowers, where in one great garden they should live and bloom, and enjoy the sunlight and the dew forever. And then a great red rose, the last of its kind, shook its fragrant petals and sweetly said, "Oh, kind West Wind, we have decided to leave this world for our beautiful home above. Please to carry this message to our friends and relations all over the land. Wherever you find a flower, no matter how humble it may be, or what its color, whisper into its ear these words, 'Be ready when the West Wind comes again to take your flight from earth. All your friends and kindred will join you in your journey to the Summerland. Their mission is ended here below, their new life will be taken up in company with their sweet friends of spring and summer, who have passed on before them. There is joyful reunion for all the flowers. Here they shall bloom no more. When the winter flies, new flowers and other blooms will shed their perfume here, but you and your friends will blossom in the eternal world, where no wintry cold nor frost will ever come." And the genial West Wind bore the message of the grand old rose far and wide, and whispered it to every flower, and the flowers bowed in silence while he spake, but when he had passed along, they shook off their useless petals and prepared for their journey as they sweetly sang, "We are going home, we are going home, goodbye, old world, goodbye." And when the West Wind came again, he found them ready, and he gathered them all up in his arms and bore them away to the happy Summerland. The North Wind came with a biting blast, but he found no trembling leaf or shrinking flower. They had all departed with their friend, the West Wind, to remain forever in that land of sunlight, where the South Wind sings to them of the peace and beauty of their heavenly home. For the little ones. All day long the leafy branches of the stately maple tree waved their banners in the breezes, bold and fearless, strong and free. All day long the golden sunshine bathed the pretty flowers in light, as they peeped above the grasses and revealed their faces bright. All day long a merry songster warbled in the leafy tree, waking all the air with music, thrilling all the hours with glee, for he held a happy secret neath his crimson mottled coat, cause of all the liquid gladness bubbling from his downy throat. Let me tell to you the secret in a dainty, pretty nest, hid among the leafy branches. There were cuddled down to rest little tiny, cunning birdlings, three in number, do you see? This was why the merry songster warbled in his happy glee. All day long the birdies wondered what this strange, bright world could be, while their gentle-hearted mother hushed them with her tender wee, and the happy, singing father brought them goodies fresh to eat, as he told them famous stories of the flowers pure and sweet. What a happy, joyous summer came to bless the maple tree as the birdies grew in beauty, strength and vigor, full and free, and they filled the earth with music, charmed the sunshine, woke the flowers, as they brought a peaceful blessing to the golden-hearted hours. WHO can tell which is the prettiest flower growing in field or dell. Think of it, little children, see if your tongues can tell. Is it the white-fringed daisy, bright with its heart of gold? Is it the fragrant snowdrop, peeping above the mold? Which is the prettiest flower blooming in woody glade? Is it the lowly violet, seeking the cooling shade? Is it the sweet field lily, lifting her shining head? Or is it the perfumed wild rose, on the clearest dewdrops fed? Which is the prettiest flower growing in meadow green? Are the buttercups so yellow, with gay and dashing mien? Is it the dandelion, so like a star of gold? Or is it the tiger lily, with manner bright and bold? Oh, who can tell, my children, the prettiest flower of all, from a lily fair and stately to violet so small? For each is bright and glowing, and fills with native grace, from early seed to blowing, its own appointed place. Work. 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 Tis better to work than ply, tis better to do some little good as we travel from day to day, tis better to help some needy one than to idle our time away. Work that is done with zeal is never too hard to do, work that is full of use will bring only strength to you, work that will bless some weary soul is filled with a purpose true. Oh, children, large or small, give happy smiles, not tears. Give pleasant looks and loving words through all the coming years to those who come to you in pain, bowed down by doubts and fears. Give of the best you have to brighten life below, to all who come within your reach as on your way you go. Be gentle, patient, true, and kind, a friend to all in woe. The angels give you joy, and guard you with their love. They watch you with their tender care where'er your footsteps rove. They guide you o'er the shining way that leads to heaven above, to my sister Genevieve. I know a little maiden, so pure and sweet and fair, tears roses in her smiling face and sunbeams in her hair, her voice is soft and pleasant, and rings with notes of love, her eyes are bright as starry gems that shine in heaven above. This happy little maiden possesses jewels bright, with mines of wealth and splendor, aflame with brilliant light. The wealth of priceless tenderness affection's soul imparts, the gems of love and kindness that shine from parent hearts. Her path is strewn with blossoms of kindly smiles and words, that break in sweetest music, like songs of summer birds, from those who dwell about here, dear brothers, sister, true ear, and crown her life with gladness more sweet than morning dew. Oh, gentle little maiden, the angels love you well, and bless your life with holier joy than human tongue can tell. They whisper to your spirit in accents pure and clear, be gentle, pure, and loving, for God has placed you here, to bless the souls of mortals, and fill their hearts with love, to lead them o'er the starry heights to holier worlds above. He gives you words of kindness to scatter as you go along the way that leads to heaven from earthly fields below. Grandma's pet. What a charming, nice old lady sits in yonder easy chair, where the straying sunbeams wander o'er her locks of snow-white hair. Do you know that she is grandma to these little children three, who are playing by the doorway in such merry, laughing glee? There is roguish little Harry, with his eyes as black as sloes, flashing, leaping, snapping, dancing, and a sweet face like a rose. There is laughing Sue, whose dresses are as bright as shining gold, a happy Sue, whose life is joyous, for she is but 10 years old. Here is little, timid Bessie, quietest of all the three, fair as any snow white lily and as sweet as she can be, with her ringlets brown and shining falling o'er her smiling face, Bessie is a pretty picture as she moves with gentle grace. Now, of all these little children, which does Grandma love the best? Listen to her quiet answer, if you put me to the test, I am sure I cannot tell you, for each one is dear to me. Harry is my pride and pleasure, and I love his boyish glee. Sue is wild and sometimes reckless, and she does not always mind what her gentle mother tells her. To such faults I am not blind, but I know that she is thoughtless, and these faults will be outgrown. Susie is my darling madcap, and no brighter child I've known. Bessie is a precious baby, and for her I often fret. If she's from my side an hour or so, perhaps she is my pet. But I love them all, the darlings, and I pray the Holy One to preserve them pure and spotless, till their life on earth is done. Two birdies. Down in a cool and mossy glen two little birdies sing. One hath a flaming crimson breast, and one a speckled wing. They chirp and talk and sing away, as birdies often do, and fill the sunny air of day with music sweet and true. They have a cunning little nest, safe hidden in a tree, wherefore we birdlings snugly rest in happiness and glee, and not a shadow flits across the sunshine of their way, and so they sit and sing in joy through all the summer day. When Master Robin brings his food to Mrs. Jenny Wren, a cheerful flutter ripples through the pleasant, mossy glen. The wee, small birdlings open wide their tiny mouths for more, as careful Jenny feeds them well from out her ample store. Oh, children, when you go and play within the mossy glen, look carefully for Robin Red, and Mrs. Jenny Wren, and as they sit and chirp to you of all their tender joy, resolve to never harm a bird nor any nest destroy. Evening. When the day has gone to sleep, and the shades of night appear, all along the evening sky twinkling stars are shining clear, then the restless, weary birds cuddle in their downy nest, undisturbed by doubt or fear, for our Father gives them rest. As the golden stars appear in the sky of crystal blue, and the flowerets seek repose, bathed in heaven's pearly dew, when the breezes cease to blow, in their wandering, willful way, when the waters quiet grow, and the leaflets cease to play, all are folded down to rest. Nature gives each one repose till the morning star appears, and the gates of day unclose, and with flowers, birds, and bees little children fall asleep, safely in the arms of love, that eternal vigils keep. When the evening stars appear, little forms in robes of white, kneeling by their mother's knee, pray to him who rules the night, and their gentle prayers ascend on the wings of faith and love, to the angels who attend little children up above. From the heavens where angels dwell, from the earth and air and sky, from the parent heart below, from the Father's love on high, comes a blessing pure and sweet, all aglow with holy care, for the children who repeat, lispingly, their evening prayer. The awakening of the flowers. Out in the sunshine, far out in the lanes, up on the hillsides, and over the plains, springing to life in each meadow and glen, filling the forests with sweetness again. See how the flowers come trooping in glee, decking the woodlands, adorning each tree, climbing the mountainside, thronging the dell, weaving o'er all things a magical spell. All through the long frosty winter they slept, nature above them her kind vigils kept, snugly tucked into their beds soft and warm, every sweet flower was safe from all storm. Spring, with her musical voice, is now heard calling, good morning, to flower and bird, singing, awaken, my darlings, it is time, winter has gone to some far distant clime. Come from the valley and hillside and glen, ay birdlings, now list for your footsteps again, violet, mayflower, snowdrop. My dears, rouse and give welcome when Robin appears. Summer is coming with sunshine and song, life will be happiness all the day long. Haste. From your slumbers now brightly arouse, shake out your garments and garland your brows. Swift at the sound of their loved leader's call, leapt up the flowers by hillside and wall, over the meadows and forests they wove treasures of beauty, each woodland and grove rang with the musical anthems of birds, nature's rich music unwedded to words, while summer found earth so enchanting and sweet, She thought nothing lacking to make it complete. Baby Nelly. Cunning little baby Nelly, with her laughing, sweet blue eyes, gazing on the world around her in a wondering, deep surprise, as if asking in amazement, "What do all these strange things mean?" Near before such giant people, or such places has she seen.